to Speak Up, Speak Out, progressive voices from around the valley and around the nation, conversing about issues important to our community.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out. I'm Ginny Wolf. Today's show was recorded in January of this year. Skagit County Community Action Agency had just released its current low-income needs assessment. Jim Justice and myself from Speak Up, Speak Out were joined by the two key coordinators of the study. Skagit County Community Action Agency is the largest public safety net organization in the county. Every 4 or 5 years, they perform a low-income needs assessment to identify and study the needs of community members who are, quote, falling through the cracks, unquote. They look at what services are available to meet these needs and where those services fall short. This year's needs assessment was released January 21st. Our guests for this interview are Karen Parnell, Deputy Director of Skagit County Community Action, and that agency's Division Director for Health and Nutrition Services, and Greg Winter of Cornerstone Strategies in Bellingham, who is the research facilitator for the study. Greg is also the Director of Whatcom Homeless Service Center and the Chair of Whatcom Coalition for the Homeless. We asked them to help us make sense of the statistics and shed some light on how this information directs services to help the most vulnerable people in our community. We also wanted to know what changes the study revealed from previous assessments and how the current economic recession is affecting this population. So Karen and Greg, welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out, and thank you for your time here today.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Good to be here.
This is a large undertaking. Why does Community Action do this low-income needs assessment? Karen, what's the purpose?
Number one, we are required to do it every 4 years by our funders. But beyond that, I think it has really become a passion of really wanting to get down at some people do it very quick and dirty, and we have chosen to be very comprehensive and go about it in this manner. And we feel it really serves the community well to bring in opportunities for access funding that would not otherwise be there without having good stats behind things.
I'd just like to emphasize, because I've worked on these similar studies in other parts of the state, that Skagit County, because of Community Action's commitment to invest in this kind of a comprehensive study, is really a leader in the state. I mean, Skagit County is a fairly small county, but compared to any county in the state, I think the comprehensiveness of their needs assessments is really quite impressive.
I would add to that, this is Jim, the comprehensiveness of the services they provide and the knowledge. It's if you have a question about things happening for low-income folk in Skagit, it's call Community Action.
So how is the information used?
We use the information in shaping programming and paying particular attention to, gee, what are the gaps that are out there that people are identifying in this particular study, and perhaps beef up some programs to do it. I know in the last assessment there was a component of the project that was looking at community land trust model in Hamilton. And actually this has been birthed in Skagit County in 2009. And so this is pretty exciting to see a piece that was just a morsel of information and a thought, and it's been brought to fruition. And that's just at Community Action. There are just a number of things that happen. I think this stuff feeds into EDASC's efforts to bring jobs to the community, to look and say, how can we bring on these low-income people and improve our workforce? We're hoping that this study will greatly enhance what is happening with movements around healthcare access.
And Karen, what is EDASC?
EDASC is Economic Development Association of Skagit County.
Thank you
for calling me on that one.
Yeah, people, at all levels of government and private funders are often impressed when they see the kind of investments in actually detailed data collection and laying a good foundation for determining the needs for new programs or expanding programs. So it's really important to have this kind of data, and it's not only impressive to people who are making public policy or funding projects, it's essential.
Greg, where did the data that you analyzed in this study come from?
It came from willing participants who are clients of any of 36 different community service programs in Skagit County. So every 4 years, as you mentioned, Community Action asks its partner agencies from around the county to spend some staff time and, importantly, ask their clients to invest some of their own time sharing their stories and intimate details of their lives over the course of about a 12-week period. So really, we call this a client intercept survey. That means we're encountering low-income households at the places where they're receiving any number of services, from food banks to any number of the community action programs, for example.
And without going into elaborate detail, I heard your presentation just a couple hours ago. Can you give us some of the salient characteristics of the population that we're talking about?
Sure. The population, generally speaking, is, in terms of income, at or below the federal poverty level. And just to give your listeners an idea, for a family of four, the poverty level is $1,800 a month. That's in terms of income. More than half of the households that were in this study had somebody in the household who's a wage earner. There are other sources of income, public benefits such as Social Security, SSI, TANF, which is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, formerly called welfare. In terms of other characteristics, a majority, over 60%, are families with children. And although a little more than half of the families said that their children don't have any particular problems, just slightly under half described a range of problems that their children have that they're challenged with. At the same time, they're challenged with a very limited income.
What would you list as indicators of poverty?
You know, they're the families that have problems accessing health care. They're people that don't have transportation to get from here to there. There are people that have low levels of education, perhaps, that limit their capacity to have jobs that bring in a meaningful wage to that family. They mean parents that perhaps have limited parenting skills, people that are having a challenge finding enough food to bring into the family.
Schools tend to use free and reduced lunch. Is that one of the indicators that you used?
This is one of the indicators that I think that we look at that at Community Action and all of our annual planning. We say, hey, what are the trends with free and reduced lunches? This is a real finger on what is happening in the community. And the statistics that came out here, we have two schools that are well. The Mount Vernon school system is up close to 70% with free and reduced, down to a low down in Conway and Anacortes that are, I think, 35% and below.
This discussion reminds me, not to put a negative light on this study, but one big shortcoming of a study like this is that, you know, when we think about households living in poverty, we think of lots of negative things. And what this study doesn't capture is the resiliency of people who live in poverty and the incredible creativity and commitment they have to their families and to each other. And while we really do focus on looking at the needs so that the community can help plan to help meet those needs, we also don't measure in this study the marvelous support network that both informal and formal that exists in Skagit County.
You know, two things that come to my mind as we talk about that are the attention that families give to their grandchildren and their older people in the family. We inserted questions in this survey this year that were new. Are you grandparents raising grandchildren? And the other one, do you have a senior family member, a parent living in your home? And this was, I think, very warming. We have many people in the community that care for each other in this way.
And that was a new question. So you don't have that data from four years ago?
No, correct. This is brand new.
Okay. Let's take a look at some of the areas you were researching. What are we talking about? The needs in what different areas?
Some of the specific topic areas are housing, health care and health care access, parenting and child care, financial and legal services and literacy, education, income, employment. And then we also looked more broadly using particular measures that would help us get a handle on overall what does the community services picture look like in terms of the importance and availability of different community services in all those areas I just mentioned.
Let's find out what some of those are. Can you give us some of the findings?
Well, you know, I'm just open to a random page in the book here, and we wanted to find out you know, we just ask people to tell us what their general health status is. It's kind of like asking people, how are you feeling today? And so we ask them how would they rate their health from poor to excellent. And we wanted to see if there was, even within the population of people who are living at the poverty level, is there an effect of income within that group? Do people at the very low end of the income scale within that group, do they have poorer health than people at the upper end? And certainly we found that to be the case. About 50% of people in the very lowest income group of families living in poverty rate their health as only fair or poor, compared to only about a third of the higher income groups.
What about in the housing, in your analysis of housing needs?
Housing statistics were very interesting, especially compared to the 2005 study 4 years ago. You know, we look at what people are paying for rent on average and what percentage of their income that comprises. So in 2005, people were paying on average between $500 and $550, and that hasn't changed in 4 years. That's still about what people are paying for rent. And people are still paying about between 45% and 50% of their income for rent. Those are the renters. What was interesting, when you look at the homeowners, now there are fewer homeowners among this group, but there's still a significant number. What we found was that the median monthly cost of a mortgage payment went from $700 a month to about $950 per month over just a four-year period. And we believe that that's, you know, an indicator of what's been going on in the housing market generally. We all know there's been foreclosures that have been brought about in large part by subprime lending, the job market, et cetera. But seeing, you know, these stark numbers with mortgage costs increasing so dramatically over such a short period of time, that really sticks out. Also, when you think of it in terms of the cost burden on these households, their average cost burden went from 50% to 68%, meaning in 2005, these homeowners were paying 50% of their income on average for their mortgage payment. Now they're paying a little more than two-thirds of their income just to pay the mortgage.
Generally speaking, what's the percent people should spend on housing?
Well, we've had a long-standing standard in this country of 30%, and that fluctuates a little bit. I mean, it goes up to 38% depending on who you're talking about. But here, you know, clearly
we're way out of that range.
We're way out of that range. So among renters, we found in this study last year that two-thirds of renters were paying more than 30% of their income on rent. And among homeowners, low-income homeowners, three-quarters, 76%, were paying more than 30% of their income on rent.
Are you seeing an increase in foreclosures and lowering of home ownership?
We have, you know, the 8 years ago, the home ownership stock of this particular sample that we did was at 22%. Then 4 years ago, it dropped down to 19%, and now it's down even 2% more. So, you know, how relative this is, you know, you kind of wonder there. But I think that is kind of a sign of the time there. The other thing that jumped out, we asked the question, do you someday hope to own a home? And, you know, I think speaking to the resiliency of families here, it's like, yes, I want to own a home. I think we had 71% said, I want to own a home. You know, and that's something to look forward to and to dream about.
You are listening to Speak Up, Speak Out, and we're speaking today with Karen Parnell, Deputy Director of Skagit County Community Action, and Greg Winter of Cornerstone Strategies in Bellingham about the recent low-income needs assessment commissioned by Skagit County Community Action. Welcome back, Karen and Greg.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Greg Winter, you have done this kind of research assistance not just for this county in previous years, but for other counties as well, I understand, some of the surrounding counties. And I was interested in your perspective on how our needs compared to the needs of other counties that you've done this sort of research for.
Yeah, that's a great question. Taking the lead from Skagit County was in the lead when they were doing this work years ago. Some other neighboring counties, after looking at Skagit's report, said, wow, we want to do that too. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to help them do some similar studies. And I think all four of these counties, Whatcom, Skagit, Pierce, and Snohomish County, have all benefited from each other doing this similar work now. In those other counties, in 2000, 2006, 2007, and 2008, so before this recession, but we did some of this similar analysis. What we found overall was that there are five types of community services that low-income households are finding in each of these four counties that are really important to their households, but in very short supply. And those are access to affordable housing, access to affordable dental and medical care, living wage jobs, and help paying their utilities. Those five show up very discreetly when we ask households which services are important to your household right now and which ones right now are you finding hard to access. And those are the five consistently we're finding across all counties, and I imagine across the state. When we look at certain subpopulations, we find some differences. But for the entire population generally of lower-income households, that's what we're finding.
I noticed in your presentation that there was a discrepancy in one subpopulation, especially the seniors, that you commented on, not comparing us to other counties, but comparing this year's study to the previous study.
That's right. If we look at, so this was a community services gaps analysis, and really what we mean by that is what I just said. What are the services that are important to households but hard to get? And so in 2005 in Skagit County, we noted that the seniors, people 60 and older, really only said that affordable housing and access to affordable dental care were the two services that they were finding a need for that they couldn't get. This year, however, we found that the seniors were right up there with everybody else, and they said those same five, they were also saying that they were needing to find jobs and couldn't find them. So that's kind of an indication that seniors who maybe hadn't planned on needing to work before the recession, for example, need to work now. I can't say that definitively, but that's consistent with what we know about what's going on in the economy.
And for health care, that they're not necessarily able to rely on Medicare?
Well, again, our survey wasn't detailed enough to drill down specifically to ask them that question, why they were expressing that health care was hard to access for them. But certainly there's a difference this year in seniors saying that health care is hard to access for them now.
Well, the other issue is that seniors do not receive dental care as part of Medicare. So that's very understandable that that would be up in that quadrant.
True. We ended the first segment of this show discussing some of the salient findings of this year's low-income needs assessment. Help for paying utilities was a big issue for a lot of people.
About one in five households said that this was something that's really important to them, but they couldn't access help with utilities.
You know, we do find that with what is happening, that Community Action is one of the major providers of assistance, energy assistance, with low-income energy assistance, Salvation Army, Puget Sound Energy, et cetera. And we actually are probably having a cut in the numbers of people that we will be able to serve this year, which is unfortunate.
Karen and Greg, you can determine who wants to jump in on this. Were there any new questions or surprises in this?
One of the new questions that we put in had to do with garden projects, and the question was worded, I believe, if you had access to a community garden, would you use it? And 82% said yes. I mean, actually, I called Greg and I said, Greg, is this a mistake? Did you transpose these numbers?
And I called my assistant and I said, Stephanie, did you do something with these numbers? And then I went to the data myself and I said, no, Karen, that's actually true.
You know, we were with the new food bank distribution center that our agency oversees. We have really been putting forth an effort, and over the last year and a half, to connect farmers and ranchers to bring in produce, to purchase foods from them for the food bank that then goes to the food banks for the food distribution center to be a central point. And so the community gardening project there's a project in place now with the Victory Garden. We just received a phone call the other day from a local church that says, we have 5 extra acres on our plot of land here. Would this be something that families would want to utilize? So this is pretty exciting right now to have some needs connecting with some of the data in our research.
It does sound exciting. We've got the Food Share Alliance with farmers donating or getting paid for
some
of their local food.
A win-win.
Keeping that close to home rather than the food ending up in Seattle and needed to be trucked back and forth. But now we also have land available for people who say if they had garden space, they'd use it.
As well as homeowners in the Victory Garden Project that will be bringing in food, excess food from their gardens for distribution through the distribution center and to food banks. So I think we're looking to see some healthier communities as a result of this. So even though the food is over in that the right quadrant where it's a high need but more available, it's being approached very creatively in the community.
I'd like to just point out something, a completely different topic. I hope that's okay. But when you ask anything surprising, this isn't really, I guess, that surprising, but it's timely, you know, as our country struggles with the issue of health care and how to reform health care. We asked people in the areas of medical care, dental care, mental health care, and prescription drugs. We tried to find out what proportion of these lower-income households had trouble accessing them, and very large percentages said that they needed medical care, but couldn't get it. They couldn't access it. 37% said that. 40% said the same thing for dental care. And 17% for mental health care, and about a third of households said that they couldn't access prescription drugs when they needed them. So it's just a stark reminder that we need health care reform.
And this is in a population who has probably higher access to Medicaid services than the slightly higher income populations?
That's correct. That's one way of looking at it, yeah.
So what I'm saying is the need might actually even be greater than those numbers suggest across the board.
Karen, tell us a little bit more about differences from 2005 and the 2009 report, specifically about public transportation.
You know, with the transportation, I think it was interesting to see that where the use of SCAT was like, I think it was like 13% 4 years ago, and now it's at 22%. And people indicated the percentages were higher in saying that, hey, they're able to access it more efficiently and it's going where they need to. So I think this is positive in the time of high gas prices. People can't afford gas. That number has jumped up. And so that's really positive. And I think the SCAT people will be pleased to hear that. And maybe they can already be telling us the same thing.
What's happening with dental care?
You know, dental care, affordable dental care, was still one of those high need things up in that top 4 to 5 needs up in that quadrant of high need, low availability. But something that was interesting, as I look to the resources out in the community, they really have improved over the last 4 years. There are actually dental clinics that are accepting medical coupons. The CMAR clinic has increased the numbers of operatories that they have, but still it is one of the high, high needs up there. And we see this in our agency, people coming in that this is a need, and it's a tough one to meet.
Karen, I'd like to know if you could tell, we want to make this human. You know, what does this mean to people? Can you tell us a story of one of your clients without breaking confidentiality, maybe something that grabs at your heartstrings or reflects how you contemplate about how budget cuts might affect what you're able to offer your clients?
You know, speaking of budget cuts, one of the programs that Community Action has been hit very hard with cuts this year has been our maternity support services program that really serves the very, very vulnerable women that are pregnant and have medical coupons. And this is a huge number. I think it's like up in the 58% of births in Skagit County are covered through medical coupons. But we have any number of clients, and you can go and talk to it, whether it be a case manager or a nurse or the psychosocial counselor. We had one recently that just hearing the story from her case manager, the father of the baby had been sent to drug rehab. The mother didn't have a car. She pushed the baby around in a stroller around town. She struggled with having a job working part-time in the mall, but still she was able to make her appointments. She came in with a smile and was very responsible, was taking work classes up at WorkSource to work on her resume and get that into shape, and all the while pushing her baby in a stroller around town. But, you know, they've got these challenges now. This little couple is here with this baby. The dad's out of rehab, and, hey, where are the jobs when you get down to where are we going to go from here? They've applied for residency in our family development center, but that is filled right now. And, you know, you just kind of wonder about these vulnerable babies that are out there. And there are other cuts that are impacted in the community that who knows where they will go. Welcome Baby has gone away this year, and ARIS has just been dealt some very, very serious cuts in that program. ARIS is at-risk
intervention
specialist. Thank you, Jim. And that has been another program. All these are things that are impacting these birth through 3 and maybe up to age 5 little preschoolers that will be so important in a longitudinal way of where things go in our community, in the state.
We had an interview recently with Peter Browning and Bill Henkel, and he was talking. Peter was talking about the Welcome Baby program going away, and it just left me with the sense of foreboding of what's down the line when we're taking some of these programs that seem like they're not dealing with maybe a critical situation right now, but they have huge impacts for the lives of people throughout their entire life. And
absolutely,
it's sobering. In your of the clients you see at Community Action, what are you sensing? Just on it, this is outside the study, but
we were involved in our annual planning that we do, and we do these little focus groups with the different departments in the agency, and going around individually to the departments, and so it wasn't feeding them with stuff to say, okay, they said this and another one said that. We asked the question, what trends are you seeing? And everyone over and over again, they said, you know, gosh, our clients are being hit with being laid off, being totally not just laid off, but maybe hours cut, and it just makes it hard to make. These are these people that are having to choose between paying rent or having basic needs of their family met. And it was even the things that they were saying as they go up to WorkSource and see the people that are walking into WorkSource are men in their 40s that are wearing suits that are coming in to apply for services to help find jobs or to bone up their, boost up their resumes to go out and get jobs. We have people coming in that are applying for basic food or food stamps for the very first time that are just at their wits' ends. And my staff person across the hallway from me is our food access coordinator, and I hear lots of these conversations, and they are very, very pulling on your heartstrings.
Were there any positive trends that you noticed? Not so we're not ending on a downturn here.
You know, I think people feeling, I think good percentages of people were feeling relatively healthy. I think that's very positive. I think people that are dreaming and want to own a home, I think that's positive. People that are saying, hey, I want to learn English, I want to increase my job search skills, I think this is indicating to us that people have hope and they want to improve their status in life.
On that note, we'll end. Thank you, Karen Parnell, Deputy Director of Skagit County Community Action, and we'll thank Greg Winter, though he had to step out a little bit early, of Cornerstone Strategies in Bellingham, for all his work on the low-income needs assessment that Skagit Community Action commissioned and has just released. Thanks for all the work you do, and we hope to have more conversations in the future. Also, thanks to Jim Justice, who helped me with this interview, and to Isla for her technical assistance in producing it.
Thank you. It was a joy to be here.
I want to close this show with a brief commentary. We're talking about people who live daily with challenges in meeting basic needs. They have educational disadvantages, problems accessing appropriate health care, impaired employment opportunities, diminished earning power, higher incarceration rates. We all pay for this one way or another. People who study what makes societies healthier point to programs and policies that positively influence well-being in the first 5 years of life as being the most crucial in influencing the overall health of the society. We jeopardize programs providing maternity and early childhood development support at our peril. That's all for Speak Up, Speak Out. Join us again next week. Join us each week for Speak Up, Speak Out. Archives are at speakupspeakoutradio.org. Theme music courtesy of Kurt Crandall. Until next time, seek peace, work for justice, celebrate diversity, and support your neighbors.
This program was produced in the studios of KSVR-FM by the Speak Up, Speak Out Collective. Distribution was made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.